We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's British Open Week on The Fan.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open.
You can't really sit in the window watching old Fred bash one off.
KFXX, KWJJ, HD2, Portland. A radio.com sports station. Now, from The Fan Sports Desk, a SportsCenter update on 1080 The Fan.
This update is brought to you by Warren Allen Attorneys at Law. They don't get paid until you're taken care of. Visit Warren Allen. First on The Fan, Anfernee Simons was named to the All-Summer League second team today, making him the second Blazer in the last 3 years to be given this honor. Caleb Swanigan was the other a couple of years ago. Simons averaged 22 points, 4 boards, and just under 2 assists in his 3 games in the Summer League. Elsewhere in the NBA, the Raptors are reportedly not considering moving expiring contracts of their vets like Serge Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, and Marc Gasol. Warriors GM Bob Myers said the team didn't acquire D'Angelo Russell just to flip him in another trade. He also said it hasn't been decided if he fits in long-term with them, despite multiple reports that said he did not fit in. The Knicks have reportedly signed free agent Reggie Bullock to a 2-year, $8.2 million deal. They also poached Marcus Morris from the Spurs and signed him to a 1-year, $15 million deal. NFL, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, reports that Ezekiel Elliott, a.k.a. Ezekiel Ilalaila, plans to hold out of training camp until he gets a new contract with Dallas. And in baseball, top of the fourth, Rays lead the Yankees 2-1. Dodgers now down big to the Phillies 6-1. That is in the third inning. Bryce Harper, a 3-run home run. Nats up 2-1 on the Orioles. That's in the top of the third. The Tribe are up 6-0 on the Tigers already. That's in the third inning as well. Blue Jays have taken the lead over to Boston 4-1. That's in the bottom of the third. Teoscar Hernandez, a 3-run home run. And the Padres have now tied the game with the Marlins in the bottom of the second. But Miami has the bases loaded with just one out. More sports scores and stories in 30 minutes. I'm Mike Lynch from the 1080 The Fan Sports Desk, Portland sports leader.
Set our hosts straight. Get breaking sports news and the latest fan videos. It's all at Facebook.com/1080TheFan. It's 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I think a bit of a storm in the teacup, I think, makes a good story.
The grass is extra brown this week.
Oh, I can feel this is going to end in tears with something stuck up. No, I'm the green agent.
This is primetime on British Open Week.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 5th through the 11th. 100% of ticket sales go to local charities. Order now at WincoFoodsPortlandOpen.com.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, guys and gals.
Elliot, got your throat?
We're having a good time today.
From the Tire Factory Sports Desk.
Still thrown off by the whole American ban for British Open Week.
Don't be. It's normal by now. Stay tuned.
It's every time I hear it, I just scratch my head and I'm like, what? From Boston.
All right, so here's what's coming up. We will discuss something we didn't get to yesterday. What if you could trade schools in college football? We'll check in on how the robot umpire experiment is going. And if we have time, look, I have a confession to make.
What do you got?
Well, you know how I was obsessed for a while with the Twitter feed that rolled out stupid clips of Mike Francesa?
Yeah.
I can see them winning this game. I can see them losing this game.
Yeah, I've moved on to a new really bad obsession.
Yeah, because for a while you did that next door neighbor feed for a while.
Dude, that, no, I'm still on that. That is fantastic.
Yeah, because there was that one.
Also, the dad joke of the day from fatherhood.gov.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, look, we don't need to list all of my
cycles.
Guilty pleasures. Now, yeah, so the Francesa thing I still enjoy. Next door, if you don't follow Best of Next Door on Twitter, you're dead to me.
Yeah, it is good stuff.
It's hilarious. And that will actually come up again tonight in the club for reasons unknown.
Oh, all right. Well, they're known to you.
But my new one is watching the O.J. Simpson videos. So O.J.'s on Twitter.
Oh, I was like, what O.J. Simpson videos are you talking about?
Well, he's on Twitter now.
Yeah, I did see that. I saw that he... This was a while back that he made the announcement. His first tweet was like a video.
Oh, Oh, believe me, it was broken down here on the show. Yeah, you were out of town.
I was gone. That was one with like, didn't he say he like wanted to get even with people?
Yes, he did.
Boy, that's freaky. You're a two-time murderer and you're like, hey, let's get even with your enemies.
I like how you made him sound like an athlete. Like two-time, not only a two-time
well, he's a Heisman
rushing champion, yeah, but he's a two-time murderer.
Well, he is.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And that's why you can't follow him.
No.
No follow here. Although he's up to 855,000 followers. Yeah, because people, I mean, and he's getting just absolutely crushed on there.
Okay.
I had to choose my words carefully.
Yeah, careful.
Because people are just going at, I mean, just read his mentions. They're hilarious. People just are going at him. So
let me ask you this.
I'm sure he doesn't read any of that.
Does Oat still poll? Like, does he?
I mean, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say yes.
You think yes?
He has the air of confidence when he speaks that makes me think, hell yes.
Wow.
And I think more so there are women that are just, it's a novelty.
Yeah. And like
be with the juice.
The danger of the whole thing. That fascinates me. Can you imagine like your daughter or I don't know, like someone you know and they're like, hey, who are you dating? OJ Simpson.
I tell you what, man.
Oh, great.
His foray into Twitter has been a disaster. And
I haven't seen anything other than that very first.
Okay, so I'm gonna bring it to you, much like Francesa.
Okay.
Okay, and I've got a couple of clips. I want to get to him today.
So is he the real OJ32? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And all he does is post little clips, and he teases things. Like he gives his thought. He thinks he's being, like, hey, this is the real OJ, and this is me and authentic. And he spits out stuff that's just, it's so dumb. And then he teases like that he's got hot fantasy football takes.
Okay.
And he'll give those to you next time.
Is he the most delusional person?
He's insane.
In the country right now?
Well, all your questions save for when we play the audio and then we can talk about him because he is insane. Like when you listen to him talk on these videos and he's trying to relate to people. He's trying to be like, oh, this is me and I've just got done playing golf.
And he's always like giggling and laughing.
Dude, he is the creep. Dude, it's unbelievable.
Like I saw an interview where he was talking about the murders and he was still like giggling and laughing. I'm like, dude.
So
whether you say you did it or not, you're talking about two people brutally murdered.
Unbelievable.
We'll get to that. Then tonight in the club, I've got a dad follow-up. This is where Next Door comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Dieter brought this to our attention, but it's – so we talked about the YouTube bathwater girl.
Yeah.
Sold her bathwater on she's a YouTuber star.
Yeah.
Woman.
She's a social media influencer.
Yeah. And she sold her bathwater.
Yeah.
Well, a guy on Next Door, a dad, caught his son purchasing the bathwater.
Okay.
So I want to read that to you.
I also have what I consider to be the strangest fitness regimen of all time. Have you seen this? Now, I've never heard of her, but I guess she's kind of a big deal. I think she's with Elon Musk or was.
Mm.
She's a Canadian singer, and she talked about her. She's got a campaign with Adidas, and wait till you see her training regimen and what it consists of.
Okay,
it's quite fascinating.
We also have Meth Gator news.
Oh yeah,
Meth Gators,
Animal Uprising.
But right now, the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh, hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
Number five.
Anfernee Simons, second team all summer league.
Wow. Second team. Do you think are you proud? Are you happy when you get named second team all summer league?
Well, he's pretty young.
So you think like that?
So I'd say, yeah,
that award goes up on the wall.
Is it better than last year?
Yeah. I don't know if he was,
I don't either, but
I don't know what team.
Although if it's better than last year,
they won the championship last year.
That's true. You think he'd trade his big second, second team all summer league for that
But like I was when I played in NFL Europe, I was all league center, and like that's not like it's not really something to feel good about.
What about
like,
your second team all academic honor?
Yeah,
at BYU that's, conference or Mountain US or God.
Are you all right?
Speak.
You having a stroke?
Mountain West, right?
Yeah, there's certain awards you get, and you're just like, should I? I mean, I.
Which
guess
is better?
It's nice to be honored, but should you really feel good about that?
Which is better? You at BYU getting second team all academic, again, college.
Number four.
Or as a pro basketball player winning second team all summer league.
Well, pro, because he's getting paid.
Right.
I'm just saying, I saw that people were like, second team all summer league. And I was like, I think you maybe had higher expectations going into that.
Well, he got hurt. I'll tell you what. You can't stop.
He got hurt the last game.
Yeah, well, he got hurt. And you can't stop the Anthony Simons whirlwind. I'll tell you that right now. The Blazers want to push this guy. They're going to push this guy.
Yes, yes, they are.
Hey, you guys following the Jeffrey Epstein story?
I am following the Jeffrey Epstein story. That thing is bananas.
He's the creepy rich guy who just got busted for sex trafficking underage girls. Yeah, he made a bunch of donations to a very popular football school.
Yeah.
The Ohio State University. Now, they say he donated $2.5 million anonymously. This was back in 2007. Yeah, this was before he did time the first time.
Like, hey, I didn't know. What?
Well, they now say his crimes are reprehensible and his ties to those gifts are quite concerning. So they're rolling with the vague, hey, we may take further action here, which means they need to acknowledge that they took money from him, but probably will do nothing. Yeah. Which I'm okay. Look, I don't know. This is maybe a topic for the other portions of our show. But, look, do you have to, like, how do you handle that?
You give it back.
You do?
You're Ohio State.
You give $2.5 million back?
Yes.
I think it's better.
It's like, child this, porn money, man.
Well, this guy's a creepo, right? And he's a billion. It's not, well, he's a billionaire.
Yes.
If he gave you $2.5 million, I think he should be giving to charities. I think that's what he should be doing with his money.
Man, I don't think you can do. I don't think you can touch that money.
So I bet you.
No.
Well, they already did. So what they're saying is, we'll get back to you, which means nothing will happen.
No.
They want to keep the money.
Well, just wait until this thing it'll blow over eventually and we'll keep our head down.
Pro Football Talk reporting there's a 40% chance Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski comes out of retirement this season. Basically, they're insinuating that the second Tom Brady gets fed up with his receiving options, he'll call Gronk and then Meathead will say, yeah.
Except he's all skinny now.
Although I don't trust Pro Football Talk all that much.
No. I don't know. I do think that they... Gronk is on a worldwide tour. I saw him on the $25,000 pyramid. Something tells me you will see Gronk again in an NFL uniform. If I was a betting man, I'd bet on him coming back.
Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott sure seems like a headache. You know, all the stuff off the field. And
sure.
Kind of an idiot.
Make the argument, though, he's the best back in the league.
He's pretty good. Now he's fed up with the Cowboys and says there is a chance that he holds out from camp because he wants a new contract.
Well, he's got 2 years left on the deal. And, I mean, certainly he's outplayed it. But, I mean, if you're Dallas, I'm not exactly sure what you do at this point. There's 2 years left on it. There's a lot of people people have been talking about this. Colin's been talking about on the show that, you know, a lot of GMs are saying that they just don't believe in giving back second contracts. So, I mean, I guess you can make the argument if you give it to him now with 2 years left on it, you're still getting more of the prime Ezekiel Elliott. Or eventually, are you just tired of this and you decide to move on from him? Do you try to trade him? But this could come to a pretty ugly head if he does decide to dig in his heels and see what Dallas does.
Mm. Someone has called you Captain Conjecture.
What?
He was hurt in game 3 of 5.
Well, I'm sorry.
Mr. Simons.
I think we got hurt at the very end. I thought it was the fourth game. He got hurt
game
at the very end.
Game 3 of 5, it says here.
Okay, well, then I apologize.
So maybe he would have been first team.
Do you look at Summer League?
See how this works?
Summer League. He did shoot the ball
right. Maybe
real
he
well,
would have won Summer League MVP.
That's right.
Yeah. Look, all right. The hype train, it's not slowing down.
Get on board.
Yeah. Do this.
Brian Windhorst of ESPN reports the Thunder are trying to trade Chris Paul to the Heat, but the deal is currently hung up. Now, the issue is the draft compensation that would go to Miami with Chris Paul. Now, remember, the Thunder already own two of Miami's future ones.
Yeah, so that was the problem is that, remember, Miami tried to trade for Russell Westbrook, but they didn't have enough because they already owned the two ones coming from them, so... They didn't have enough to get Russell Westbrook, but they may have enough to get Chris Paul.
Yeah, so the Heat want those ones back. And the Thunder are like, yeah, no.
No.
But we're willing to swap out a few picks for later down the road if you want. And so that's why they are probably yelling at each other over their iPhones right now.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, if you're Oklahoma City, you're just trying to get something for him because you can't have him on the roster. That's not going to work out. You don't want to buy him out because you don't want to pay him whatever it is, $100 million to not play.
Or they're yelling at each other over a really expensive bottle of wine at a nice steakhouse.
There's a real chance of that.
And that's how they do business. You know?
Hopefully in Miami and not Oklahoma City.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to...
Although I'm sure Oklahoma, you know, the beef, they probably have some good steakhouses down there.
Yeah, but look, if we're Oklahoma City and Miami and we're going to meet, if you're Miami, don't you insist that they come out to Miami? You're not going to Oklahoma City to meet.
Yeah, look, I'll buy your ticket. Can you just come out here? I got us a reservation at a really nice place.
Fly out there.
Hot 5 at 5 is refreshed by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Duck and Beaver fans, as you power up for game day, be sure to grab some Frost Brewed Coors Light. Please drink responsibly. What if college football, you could trade schools? That's next on The Fan.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 5th through the 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up at 5:30. But let's be honest, it'll be about 5:35. How the robot umpire experiment is going in the Atlantic League. We'll check in on that. But the Conference USA and Sun Belt Leagues of college football have been discussing trading schools.
I think this is a great idea.
And they want to do it. I think they said they want to do it for regional balance.
Yeah. I want it like on a year-to-year basis where conferences can just go to the table and deal someone that's underperforming.
I've always said I wanted the promotion relegation system from soccer and college football.
Right, that's what I was thinking of too.
I love that.
How does that work again?
The idea that I created in my mind is that Power 5 is the top, and the worst four teams in Power 5 go down to Group of 5, and the best four teams from Group of 5 go up to the Power 5 conferences. That was my
idea. So just by record?
By record, yeah.
But it's so weird because with scheduling and all that, what you'd have to do is you'd have to have you'd have to have a handful of teams in each conference. Like out west, you could have like Boise State and BYU, Colorado State, right? And like they would be loosely attached to the Pac-12. And then back east, you know, you would take your Temples and places like that. And you would have to have people loosely attached, because if you just said like the bottom of college football, you can't have a team from the Midwest or a team from the East all of a sudden joining the Pac-12. It would have to be a regional thing. And
right, when we did this, I think I brought this up 2 years ago. We did the experiment. I think most years it would work without needing to have those loose ties, because there's teams that are close enough that it would be it wouldn't all just be East Coast teams, right? So I don't know. I just think it'd be fun.
Well, I can tell you this, Kansas would be down there every year.
Well, Oklahoma or Oregon State.
They'd be in the Group of Five already.
Oregon State.
Well, I'm worried that Kansas couldn't win enough games in Group of Five to get back up to a Power Five league.
Well, and this is the other problem with that is because of the pay discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots, if you did find yourself falling down, you wouldn't get back up.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, if you fell down for places like, let's just take Oregon State or even Washington State, for example. Right. So Washington State, this is a better example because they've risen back up, whereas Oregon State hasn't yet. And we hope they do with Jonathan Smith. But when Washington State fell on hard times with the Paul Wolf situation, as bad as they were under that system, and they get bumped down, there's no way they're getting back up, because when you go down there, some of those TV deals for those smaller conferences are like $1 million or $2 million a year, and you couldn't have afforded a Mike Leach to bring yourself back up. So there really isn't a way for schools that were to fall off to ever get back up. So that would be the problem with it. In theory, it's a fun idea, but practicality-wise, it would never work.
So yeah, you would need a different structure.
Yeah.
So this year, if I did this correctly, I did it very quickly, the teams that would go down would be Louisville, who went 2-10 and 0-8 in ACC play. You'd have Rutgers, who went 1-11, 0-9 in Big Ten play. You have Oregon State, who went 2-10. And then you would have Arkansas, who went 2-10, would all go down.
Wait, how many did Kansas win? Did we pick up three last year?
Did I miss Kansas? Let's see.
Well, whether they did or didn't, my point
Kansas
is...
Kansas was 3-9 last year. Yeah,
they won the third game.
So
sweet.
All of those schools...
Things are looking up.
All of those schools would go from making, let's say, 25 to 32 million, and they would go, and they would either have to have independent TV deals or you'd rope them into the Sun Belt or whatever, and you're making $1 million. You couldn't afford it from a financial standpoint. And the budget for those schools year to year, you couldn't count on it. It's an impossible task in order to do that and have it work in college football.
No, it is. But Conference USA and Sun Belt are serious. I mean, they're talking about trading schools. Now, can you name the best teams in Conference USA or Sun Belt? Or has it been so much restructuring that you're like, I don't even remember who's
Sun Belt is weird now.
Yeah, Sun Belt, I don't know if I could tell you.
Usually Louisiana Lafayette's pretty good, the Raging Cajuns.
Sun Belt.
Isn't FAU in the Sun Belt?
Louisiana Monroe is in the Sun Belt. Also, Appalachia State's there. That's their best.
Oh, okay.
Team.
Wait, is Louisiana Lafayette no longer in the Sun Belt?
ULL? It doesn't seem that way here, Mike. Conference USA.
I know Conference USA, you've got Marshall's in there. Florida Atlantic is in there.
Yeah, those guys.
Louisiana Tech. UTEP, UAB, North Texas.
Now you're just reading that. You sounded like you were saying, oh, yeah, I know this. You're reading that.
No.
Now, wait a minute. Who did you say? Florida, who? Or Louisiana?
Louisiana Lafayette.
Let me look them up. Who else is in there? Sorry.
I don't know who else is. I have no idea who's in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, the Raging Cajuns are in the Sun Belt. They're considered Louisiana Raging Cajuns. They went 7-7 last
All right, well, anyway, who cares about them? Does anybody care? No.
No.
If the Pac-12 could trade... I'd look long and hard at dealing the Arizona schools.
To who?
Well, okay. The biggest thing for me would be, because I think the Arizona schools represent the stigma that is against the Pac-12, in a sense that they have mediocre investment that leads to mediocre results.
Okay.
Like Arizona and Arizona State, how many times, particularly with Arizona State, are we going to say, oh, they should be way better? They never are. Why? Because they just don't care all that much.
Yeah.
Okay?
It's a hard place to get buy-in.
So I want any schools, I would trade them for any schools that have a big football culture. Where football matters, that's what I want to replace the Arizona schools with. And that could even mean like a Boise State. I just think the league would be more fun. Maybe even BYU, but let's not get carried away. In other words, I like having Utah better than the Arizona schools because they care at Utah. I think that was a great ad. But if they had added the Arizona, let's say the Pac-12 already had Colorado and Utah, and then they added the Arizona schools later, I think we'd be sitting here going, why the hell did they add those two crappy-ass schools? Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see where you're coming with that.
I think Utah is way more fun to have in the league and than the Arizona schools. So I don't know who I'd trade them for, but it would be because they just don't have that big of a football culture for schools that do.
The only problem with that, and again, allow me to be the...
Is that a fair trade?
No, it's not, because I'm going to poop all over this just like I did Mike's idea. Because so much of this, well, two things in the Pac-12.
I have another fun addition to my idea too, by the way.
Which is why Boise would never work under any circumstance in the Pac-12. Two main reasons. One, academics. Believe it or not, the Pac-12 presidents.
Look.
What?
Well,
this is just a fun idea.
Yeah, you're getting a little too serious here. We're just having a little fun here with a little college football. I mean, I think you're taking it a little too far. I just think it would be fun. You're so right about everything you're going to say about Boise State is right. It would just, you can't tell me it wouldn't be fun to have them in the Pac-12 as good as they are.
I would love to have Boise State, but they wouldn't be as good as they, if they were in the Pac-12. But it would take a while. It'd be like Utah, right?
No, but that's my point, is their culture.
Sure.
That's like Utah. Utah's hanging around, man.
What we can do with the resources.
Utah stepped it up. They just built like a $35 or $40 million football facility, right?
Yeah.
They come to the Pac-12. There are no guarantees. So they make the jump, and because they care about football there, they're doing pretty damn well. As a matter of fact, I think they're the favorite in the South this year. So yeah. it takes time. They haven't been in that long. I think the same could happen with Boise State. Now, it never would because of what you were about to go into.
And the other one was TV market size. Like Phoenix is like market 11 or 12, and so much of the revenue is based on TV size. That's why I like Rutgers and Maryland get into to big conferences.
Yeah, but I just don't like the fact that you've got schools and all that business part, the business side of it, of course. This would never happen. They would never allow this. It's not going to happen. But just from a fan standpoint is kind of where Mike and I are coming from on this. I just think the Arizona schools are so lame.
Yeah.
They're always lame.
What I would,
well, except for Arizona basketball.
Well, I thought we were just talking football here.
The other one, too, and we came close to this, was Oklahoma and Texas. Like, remember back when the Pac-12 was originally created, supposedly Oklahoma and Texas were on the verge of being a part of that.
14 teams, right?
And that, Oklahoma State.
And that would have been the one.
And Texas Tech.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but who are you going to trade for that? I mean, that's different. That's expansion.
It's expansion.
Like, they ain't going to trade Texas and Oklahoma for Arizona and a bag of Doritos. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. So if you're going to get, like, you could probably do this exercise with, like, realistic type trades.
Yeah.
I don't know who that would be. I mean, I think that.
Like, would you be willing to trade, like, Kansas? Like, if you get Kansas, you get a horrible football program, but you get instant credibility for basketball. So could you take a crappy football school, see Arizona that hasn't done anything, and Arizona's okay in basketball, or Arizona State.
See, I'd make that deal. Better,
and you make that deal because you bring in Kansas, and at least it's another win for everyone. And then in college basketball, you've got a premier program.
Hey, that's a good one. Okay, so let me tell you this, and I may be homering out here.
Yeah.
But that is a great example of my point, is that I think that having a little knowledge of what goes on at Kansas, having went to school there and know a lot of people there, they're more committed to football there than they are at Arizona. They're just crappy.
They're just, yeah.
What they're doing is they're trying. I mean, they just hired Les Miles. Like, they care. They're paying Les Miles. They're dumping a bunch of money into their stadium. Now, they're behind on this, and their wins and losses have got to improve before they ever see, you know, the money start flowing in. But there's a big donor base there that, you know, those two schools may have the same type of problem, in a sense that anybody that went there, if they're going to donate big money, they want to be associated with basketball. The basketball program. So that's a tough one, and that may be more so of a problem at Kansas. But I can tell you, they are trying their ass off to win at football at Kansas. Is Arizona?
Well, I mean, they're hiring big name coaches.
Is Arizona State? I mean, I thought someone was a good hire, but I also thought Rich Rodriguez was a good hire, and he wasn't that good.
No.
So
he also had a culture of, you know, misogyny and sexual harassment.
That's true. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rich Rod was.
But I think they're the quintessential schools where you could put a good coach can go in there, and it's just he just can't get over the hump, because and you wonder why.
The pecking order is always going to be you're going to be.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so Kansas is the same, but I think they're really trying hard at football. I don't know if I see that from the Arizona schools.
No.
So I'd make that trade.
And one addition I have to my relegation idea, by the way. So in Germany, in the Bundesliga, the third worst team plays the third best team in the second division in a relegation playoff.
Ooh.
Whoever wins either goes or stays in the top league. So imagine the fourth worst team in the Power Five playing the fourth best team in the Group of Five to see who gets to stay or go to the Power Five.
Now,
that would be fun.
Now, if I was, that would actually be pretty fun. If I was commissioner, look, this would, because you got to give something up in order to get something back.
That's right.
So first off, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if someone had to go, it would be Oregon State. I mean, that stinks. But in the two revenue sports, you're not doing anything. You got baseball.
And you're saying that only because Washington State is better right now?
Yes.
Because aren't they kind of on par?
It would be the same thing. But Washington State right now, at least from a football standpoint, there's a better track record there.
Well, my.
Better history there, and Mike Leach is relevant. But yes, Washington State and Oregon State would be the two schools that if I was looking this from a business and just football, basketball standpoint, Oregon State and Washington State would be the two most vulnerable properties. You don't have big TV markets, right? You haven't had much success. The academics isn't quite there like with some of the other schools, but you're not going to get a whole lot back from those. So that would not be where I would go to make the deal, and it wouldn't be the two Arizona schools. Where I would go would be UCLA and Cal. Those are the two that I would look to get something back.
Two academic?
Follow me on this. Phenomenal academic schools, right? Especially with Cal. One of the best public universities in the country. I got Stanford already, right? I got USC. I got Stanford. I don't need it. I'm already a very prestigious conference as it is, right? Cal, you're okay, and it's a brand name, but it's not like you're lighting the world on fire. You're decent. There's some cachet to it, and I can get something back, right? It's a footprint there on the West Coast, Strawberry Canyon, beautiful place. I can get something back from Cal. You get the San Francisco TV market with it. I'll bring something back in for Cal. UCLA, the same thing. Don't need UCLA. I got USC already. Football, lack of commitment to success. The basketball program has a name, but hasn't been good in a number of years. I already have a huge foothold in LA. And I think a place like the Big 12 would love to get their hands on Los Angeles and the San Francisco markets. So that's where I would look to deal.
For who?
I would put out UCLA and I'd put out Cal, trying to lure back like an Oklahoma and maybe an Oklahoma State or an Oklahoma and, I don't know, maybe like maybe you go into the Big Ten, maybe a Nebraska and try to bring that back.
I think you're asking too much. But I do think that...
Because the Cal level is not going to get you those two schools.
I think that's right. I think there's a trade in there, though. And I would say...
Remember, TV market, academic prestige, San Francisco. Cal's got a brand name. Cal and UCLA are going
to
bring you a piece
back. I think you might be able, and this might even be a stretch, to be able to get something like Oklahoma TCU.
There you go.
You get Dallas-Fort Worth and a good school.
What if we did Cal-UCLA?
Yeah. Because I think we can get away with those two, and it's not a big
for
deal.
For Oklahoma-Kansas. You think that's... That's too much. Oklahoma's too much. How about this? Cal, Oregon State. Sorry, Beavs. For Oklahoma State. You think that they'd pull that deal?
A two for one?
The Pac-11.
Or you could
do... Do we have to take Baylor and all their rapes as well, though?
No.
Because I don't want that.
No, you don't want Baylor.
I don't want Baylor.
That's a...
Maybe you take Iowa State with them or something.
I don't want them.
What about Kansas? I'll take them. Throw them in, please.
I'll take Kansas.
Please.
I'll take Kansas. Again, UCLA, from a basketball standpoint, you're right there.
Would you trade UCLA for Oklahoma State right now?
No.
You wouldn't?
No. LA TV market, you're going to have to do better than Oklahoma State.
Because Oklahoma State, the interesting thing is when T. Boone dies, you know what happens. Like, they're committed. They're good every year.
Nah, I got to have
paying their coach a lot.
I got to have more.
All right. So you're not trading Oregon. You're not trading Stanford.
Nah.
Definitely not trading the Huskies or USC.
No, I'm telling you.
Utah's in good shape.
UCLA and Cal, to me, are the ones that you can give up, and I think you could get something back in return.
What I feel about that is I would much rather give up the Arizona schools and those two schools simply because it's kind of the same. Like, they're all...
Well, I would, too, but I don't think you get anything back for the Arizona schools. Outside of a good basketball program for Arizona and the ability to party with hot co-eds, I don't think either one of those schools is bringing a ton to the table.
All right. Well, maybe we just go get a little Boise State. Would you trade Arizona across for Boise State?
If you were just talking about football and all that other stuff, like just, you know.
We're not talking about that stuff.
Yes, I would take Boise State. I think the Pac-12, if it became the Pac-14, and again, it doesn't make sense because neither market but splitting the money. I think adding Boise State and BYU – one to the north, one to the south. So Boise in the north, BYU in the south, I think would make the Pac-12 infinitely more interesting.
All right, let's check in on how the robot umpire experiment is going in the Atlantic League. We'll do that next. But first, Mike.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 5th through the 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, the Atlantic League, which is an independent baseball league, very far removed from Major League Baseball, is the test guinea pig for a lot of MLB's ideas. And we went through them earlier because we were talking about the stealing of first base, which is a thing now, at least in the Atlantic League.
Yeah, it happened for the first time, last week?
But the biggest thing is the automated strike zone.
Yeah.
And they have already implemented it in the Atlantic League, and Bleacher Report wrote a pretty good write-up about how it's going. So I'll just read you a piece of this. Now, this is automated balls and strikes. There is still a human umpire back there, and he has an earpiece.
Yeah, and then just it's same technology they use, like on when you watch the broadcast, and they have the little strike zone in the corner, and So he just, it tells him in his ear immediately, ball or strike, and then he's able to relay that, and he's still in charge of plays of the plate and keeping the flow of the game going.
So this says, the Atlantic League has waded through a myriad of issues on the robo-umpire experiment, all of which have contributed to delays. So it says it's more than just calibrating the strike zone. To start, decisions had to be made regarding such seemingly minute details as the volume level in the umpire's earpieces. It can't be so loud as to damage their hearing or be a distraction, but it certainly needs to be loud enough to overcome crowd noise, which varies, and the calls through the earpieces. Chimes, bells, whistles, a sound only for a strike, a silence for a ball, and the earpieces and masks must be compatible enough that when an umpire removes their mask during a game, the earpiece doesn't go with it and fall to the ground. All these little things you don't even think about. So sure. these are the kinds of things that they're having to deal with. The league decided on a male voice in the ear that would say one of three things, strike, ball, or no track. In the last case, the umpire must make the call on their own, which illuminates another issue. The plate umpire must not become overly dependent on the system because if it fails, even for one pitch, they must be alert enough to call the pitch. Also, umpires must remain focused to make the calls on check swings. In early tests, the earpiece voice was dropping the first part of the call, and the umpires were hearing Reich, all, and rack. The devil, as they say, is in the details. Most crucial, obviously, is the accuracy of the calls. One common and false assumption is that the strike zone is a sort of rectangular box that is vertical, one size fits all for every player, much like the strike zone box you see on telecast. That is not the case. Using the rule book strike zone, from just below the chest to the bottom of the kneecaps, the lasers adjust for each player and then bank that into a central file system so that each player will have an assigned strike zone. For example, Aaron Judge is 6'7", Jose Altuve is 5'6". If they were in this league, the standard inside-outside zone over the plate, 17 inches across, would be the same, but Judge would have a far bigger top-to-bottom strike zone than Altuve. MLB umpires, as you would expect, still need to be sold on this idea, and adding to the tension is that MLB's working agreement with the umpires expires after this season and a new contract must be negotiated. A handful of umps are declining to comment per a directive from the umpires union. Instead, the executive committee of the MLB Umpires Association provided a statement, which reads in part, "We are graded by MLB's own system every single day. Although some seem to believe that a machine will get it 100%, will get it right 100% of the time, that simply isn't the case. The machines are only as good as the people programming and running them because, remember, the strike zone changes based on the height of every batter. And as both Major League Baseball and the Umpires Union have noted, electronic strike zones include a margin of error. Broadcast strike zone boxes and recent studies use raw data without accounting for significant electronic strike zone error margins. In fact, under MLB's own grading system, the entire Major League Baseball umpire staff averaged only over 97% correct ball and strike calls last season."
So basically what they're saying is, I mean, you would expect the umpires to be against this because I'm not going to say it renders them meaningless, but it certainly takes away the value of an umpire. So that's beyond bias that an umpires union would have.
Well,
this
but did
to
they
say
have,
on it.
The question is, do they have a point about the margin for error? Look, they're saying there's a margin for error either way. We're really good. So why switch?
Because this is more accurate. To me, that's we've had this argument, but that's like saying, you know, on goal line plays or on sideline plays in the NFL, the referees are good and they get it right the vast majority of time. So why have replay? Because why get it right the vast majority of time when you can get it right every time? Or as close to every time as you can.
They're saying you won't.
And the consistency of it. You can watch any Major League Baseball game, and it can take you a couple innings to figure out what the hell is going on as far as the strike zone. It changes from game to game, and I think it's ridiculous. The idea of having a uniform strike zone, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Well, but it's not uniform. It changes from each batter. So you're going to look at a pitch to Judge and go, well, that's not a strike, but to Aaron Judge, because it's hard to see on TV how tall he is, that is a strike. And so there may be some confusion there. But yeah, I mean, the point is the computer should get it right more of the time. Now, Boston University did a study, and they published this in April, and it refutes the claim by the union that umpires only miss on 3% of ball and strike calls.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it says MLB itself disagrees with the study, and via sources, they agree the adjusted umpire staff average was above the 97% mark. I don't know how that could be right.
Run that by me one more time.
They're saying they get 97% of the calls right.
Yes.
I don't know how that can be right.
Oh, I thought, but what did the...
MLB agrees. They disagree with the Boston University study, and they say that adjusted, the umpire staff average was above the 97% mark.
I don't even know what that means. What is adjusted?
Well, it's minutia.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
The question is, do they have a point about how good they are? First of all, how accurate they are?
No, I don't.
And how accurate the computer will be.
I don't buy that they get 97% of the calls right. And I remember watching an HBO Real piece on it, and they said that it's to say that something is, like you said, it's 97% correct. The point that they made when they did this a number of years ago on the HBO Real Sports piece was there are a ton of calls that are no-brainers. They're balls and strikes. Any fool out there, you or I or Mike or anyone could go back there and be like, that's a ball. It was a foot outside, or it was a strike. It was right down the middle. Those aren't the hard ones. They're talking about when the marginal pitches. And if I remember correctly, it certainly wasn't a 3% margin of error that they were talking about with major league umpires. And that's the part that drives me crazy is that in you can watch a game in the first inning and a ball on the outside is a strike. And then two innings later, it's in the exact same spot. Nope. Or he decides on any given day that he's going to give them the outside portion of the plate and one can be 6 inches off. And he decides that he's going to call that a strike all game long. I hate that. To me, to have a uniform strike zone where you take the judgment call out of it and this is a strike, this is a ball. I've just said it all along. I think that should be the goal of any sport, is to have it be as black and white as possible. In the NFL, there's not a, well, was he in or was he out? Well, I think it was close enough. And this game, I'm going to say that, yeah, I'm going to give him that, even though his foot was on the line. No. Were you in or were you out? And with a robotic strike zone, with a laser-guided strike zone, you can say, that was the definition of a strike. That was a ball. You missed the corner. And I don't see how you could be against that unless you're an umpire and this renders you...
Well,
kind of insignificant.
I think the players are saying it's not that black and white. When we come back, I'll tell you what Corey Kluber said as a major league pitcher, and then I'll tell you what Eric Hosmer, and then Wally Backman is a manager that has been talking about it. You know, Wally Backman, local guy.
Yeah.
He likes it. And of course, what you're going to get is you're going to get hitters that love it and pitchers that hate it.
Yeah. And this guy was the HBO piece, or HBO piece that they were talking about, their analytics. And I think this number was correct. I was trying to remember what it was. And he said that 97% may be right, but 33% of the close calls, those are the ones that are missed.
Yeah, that's the one we talked about on HBO.
Yeah, the HBO.
Where they said, yeah, right. Okay. So they're saying, hey, we get it right most of the time, but there are borderline calls.
That you're missing a third of them.
That you miss a third of them. That's right. And the computer, and what the computer advocates are saying is they'll get those right more consistent more of the time. Now it's not that black and white. So I'm going to read you pitcher quotes and batter quotes next, and then we'll move on to the club on the Fan.
This is a British Open Week edition of Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 5th through the 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
Damn right it is. We're talking about the Major League Baseball's experiment in the Atlantic League with robot umpires. Computer umpires. So here, I'm going to read you a few quotes, but just in the interest of clarity, because we were a little confused about the statistics. Basically what they're saying is, Major League Baseball umpires are good because a lot of pitches, it's obviously a ball or a strike. You and I could call it.
Yeah, those are not hard.
The fringe pitches, Major League Baseball umpires have proven to have missed 33% of those pitches.
Yeah.
And what this new...
And some of them, by the way, are egregious, where a ball will be a foot outside and rung up on
it. A good example of that is a 3-0 count. A lot of times a pitcher just throws one close and it's a strike.
And that to me is ridiculous.
For the computers, they're going to tighten that up. Why would you not want that? Okay, so here are a couple of quotes from players. Cleveland ace Corey Kluber. He said, I think there are a lot of pitches that with human umpires are not strikes that would be different if all of a sudden you go by a robotic or automated strike zone. You could literally have a guy that throws a 12-6 curveball that bounces on the plate that would catch that front corner. That would be a strike. It's unrealistic for somebody to be able to hit that. Or you could have a ball that's off the plate and just nicks that edge, and it's not a strike, but the computer says it is. So he thinks hitters would be frustrated because pitchers are so good that they can drop it in there at different angles.
Anything that's a great point that I didn't even think of. Anything that just touches the strike zone barely is going to count as a strike, whereas 98% of the ball is a ball, and it's going to call it a strike. That's a ball. It's not a strike, but the computer is going to call it that way.
But you could also say, well, they'll figure. I mean,
there will be an adjustment period to it, but I love the fact that you're going up there knowing exactly where your strike zone is.
Well, look, I think that, okay, so let me read you a quote from Christian Yelich. Christian Yelich said this. Where's his? He said, I think the human element is part of the game. And when you go to the electronic route, you run into things you didn't anticipate. You start out with good intentions and then it can get complicated. And as it goes down that road, I'm just one of those guys that doesn't want to see it go down that road. I think the guys behind the plate do a really good job. Obviously they make mistakes, blah, blah, blah. His point to me, I get where he's coming from, entitled to it. But I just think that is it's a baseless claim.
That's 100% my argument is want the human error in the game.
I understand. And I get it, respect it, but there's nothing to sink your teeth into. That's just your sensibilities just want that. There's really no tangible argument.
No,
there.
There's no logic.
It's just that
behind
I don't
it.
Want change.
Exactly.
And so that's what I'm saying. So that argument is, I think is to me, it just doesn't hold much water. What Corey Kluber is saying is interesting. That is an interesting sort of twist on this he hadn't thought about, but you got to talk to these guys that can dot a dime. You know, these guys are really good.
Yeah.
So what Kluber is saying, and he may not be right, but coming from that fear-based place too, of I don't want change. And so I'm going to find something to say that makes it look like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
I'm open to the idea. I'm with you. I'm open to the idea if someone gives me tangible reasons why.
And that's one.
But yeah, that's one. But most of what I'm hearing either from umpires is, well, I don't want to become irrelevant, or Mike, who makes the argument of...
Or Christian Yelich.
I like the... Christian Yelich. I like the human error side of it, and...
I think it gets rid of some of the spirit of the game. That is my big argument.
Okay.
I think so much of the spirit of the game is in that little intricacy stuff, and it would just completely eliminate it.
Okay.
So again,
now,
that just goes back to, I want it a certain way. Not that it makes it better, you just...
I think robot strike zones would make the game worse. I think it would negatively impact the game. That is my argument.
Based on your sensibilities.
Yes.
Other people say it would make it better because it gets it right more often, which is what you want. It's just, you're never going to agree on it. Okay, so here's the last quote. Wally Backman, who is a manager now, used to be with the Mets. He's a wild child. He now is a manager in the Atlantic League. And he saw it recently. They did a 5-inning test of it in a Long Island Somerset Patriots game.
Sure.
Whatever that is. And here was his quote. He said, I loved it. There's no missing. The inside and the outside is perfect. You're not getting that ball a couple of inches off the plate, which a lot of umps will give to the opposing pitcher. The up and down part, hitters will adjust. They always have. I think it's fair to players and also a benefit to pitchers too. I think all of the players will adjust.
And that would just tend to be my side of the things.
That's what I think, too. I think they would adjust.
That is a hill that I will always die on, is getting the call right without affecting the pace of play. And this, to me, speeds up the pace of play. I don't understand any argument to not getting it correct. Is there another sport where you could say this about? It's baffling to me.
I think the only...
Soccer, with the VAR, people are really fighting it hard.
Is it working?
I mean, it's getting calls completely right, and fans are furious about it. So
because they're getting it correct.
Yeah.
I've
seen a lot of the same arguments that I use for baseball, from soccer people going, well, it's not in the spirit of the game. Like, that was, sure, his toe was offsides, but come on, he's not offsides.
Well, I think it's complicated because the strike zone is not like a line in tennis. The strike zone's a little different, so it is complicated, and they are going to have to get it right, which is what Eric Hosmer said. He said, look, I'm all for it if
if it's,
you know, if yeah. they can, and it's all like this article said, the devil's in the details. We'll see how it goes, but definitely for trying it. I mean, if it's more consistent, then you win. It's just, it's a winner.
I just think evolve or die. Right. And I do love the fact that this baseball commissioner, well, in the baseball and in the NBA, I think both Manfred and Silver are both phenomenal at this, where they are realizing that the old way of doing things, you shouldn't continue to do them just because that's the way it's always been done. And I applaud both commissioners for willing to take a look at this stuff, whether it actually comes to fruition or not, who knows, or how long it takes or how it's implemented. I just love that they're thinking outside of the box.
I think you'll see it. You'll see it eventually. And who knows, maybe guys like Mike eventually will be like, yeah, you know what? Don't notice a thing. Not that big of a deal. I've gotten used to it. Or maybe maybe down the road, they'll be like, dude, this is the worst thing to happen to baseball. And that, I can't stand it. That's my question.
If Mike watched a baseball game and he didn't know that this was going on because the umpire just has it in his ear and he's calling ball and strikes. If you watched a game, I don't think you would know for one second that the calls were being made by a radar, and yet somehow you think that that's going to negatively affect the game. I just don't understand it.
I just think it's way broader than a one game thing. And I've been saying this now for a little bit. I don't dislike instant replay. I think in a lot of cases it's important for certain things, but if you go past a certain threshold, that's where I start having issues with it.
Coming up next, it's the club. You guys are fighting for the last word, and right now it's Souk, but Mike,
he'll respond.
Would you like to retort before we go? Wait, don't. Somebody be the bigger man here. Shut up, for the love of God. We've got the club to do.
Well, can you shut up?
Oh, yeah. Hey, we have fitness news, the strangest fitness regimen of all time. I've got a follow-up from a dad whose son bought the YouTuber's bathwater. He's not happy about it. And we also have meth gators to discuss. Yeah. That's all coming up next in the club on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.